There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome into College Football Live. Acho Orlovsky butt in here for the next 30 minutes, and we're just about 2 weeks away until the start of the college football season, but it's still kind of talking season, and Dabo Swinney talking still about the national championship last year and questioning the idea that Alabama was tired in that game due to the heavy SEC schedule. He said, quote, "I keep hearing that Alabama was worn down by this gauntlet they went through. I'm like, what game did they get challenged in?" And the response is, they played in the SEC. Well, we played Alabama, Texas A&M, and South Carolina, three SEC teams, and one of our toughest games was Syracuse. It's just fascinating to me to see all the stuff out there. So, Acho, are you buying the SEC gauntlet is the reason they didn't play well in the national championship?
Not at all. In fact, what SEC gauntlet? You talk about Alabama, 26-1 in their last 27 SEC games. That's not a gauntlet for Alabama. The SEC is more or less a cakewalk. That's specifically for Bama. Again, they've won their last games in the last two seasons against the SEC by 29.8 points. And if you exclude Georgia, you're talking about over 32 points per game. For Alabama, it's easy, and that's really an excuse. Nick Saban's not making the excuse, so I'm not sitting here knocking Bama fans, but whoever is coming up with that theology, purely inaccurate.
That's the first time I've ever agreed with you in my life, so it's a good start to the show. So, like, here's the thing. The reality is that on the night of the national championship, Alabama got smacked by a better team. That team that was more talented, they were more ready to play, and they were better coached in that night. Tua sat in 7 fourth quarters last year. What kind of gauntlet is that when you sit in 7 fourth quarters? And then the opposite argument could be made. Like, if Alabama played such a tough schedule, well, I don't understand how Clemson was able to get themselves up for the national title game when they had such a cakewalk in their regular season as well. So I agree with Dabo that the SEC is not the gauntlet. Also, look at the bowl game record. The SEC was 6-6 in bowl games. The ACC was 6-5. Sometimes the proof is in the pudding.
Yep. Okay, here's what I love. The players are already getting involved on the conversation. Bama's Dylan Moses said, well, I think Georgia was the toughest team that we played. So then the Clemson players had to chirp back, and they said, well, Texas A&M was the toughest team we played. So if there's going to be a 5.0, there's already a lot of fuel to the fire. Now, there was one player for Clemson who did not get a national championship ring, and that was Kelly Bryant, the quarterback who left after four games after getting benched for Trevor Lawrence. So interested to see if you guys agree on this. Dan, we'll start with you. Does Kelly Bryant deserve a ring?
No, not at all. And I understand that Kelly Bryant was part of that football team, but he was a part of that football team for four games. And then he made the choice to leave. He chose eligibility for a year over a ring. And the perfect example is this. Let's go hypothetical, okay? Manny, you're on a fast track at ESPN, okay? So you're about to become a star. Let's say hypothetically you get married. And then a year after that, God forbid, hypothetically, your wife chooses to divorce you. I'm not asking the legal ramifications. I'm asking in your opinion. She chooses to divorce you. And then 2 years after that, you get Monday Night Football. Now she wants a bunch of your money. Do you think that you should give her a bunch of your money?
Here's the thing, Dio. I'd just be thrilled with getting Monday Night Football if we're being honest, my
man. Answer the question.
If we are being honest. No, that is besides the point. I'm not playing your hypothetical game, because let me tell you the facts. Without Kelly Bryant, Dan, they would not have been there. Without Kelly Bryant, they wouldn't even have been in the college football playoff more than likely. Remember, Trevor Lawrence started the second half of that A&M game, and Kelly Bryant had to come in there and bail him out. Led the team to two scoring drives in under 5 minutes. The head coach for Clemson, Dabo, and I quote, said, without his experience, that is Kelly Bryant's, we would not have gotten out of that game with a win. So again, people are so quick in this day and age to forget who brought them there. Dabo, you think he's getting that 10-year, $93 million without Kelly taking him to the ship the year before or helping them get to the ship last year? Not at all.
Ash, here's the issue, though. So Kelly Bryant absolutely got them to 4-0, but he didn't get them to 15-0. Trevor Lawrence did that.
He did.
You get a championship ring for going all the way and being part of the championship. And here's the counter argument to you with the Kelly Bryant situation. So what happens if there was a backup linebacker who was only a special teams guy who played 6 snaps a game, and through those first 4 weeks, I guess he had some kind of impact. It'd be tough to quantify, but since he doesn't play quarterback, we don't think of his impact as great as Kelly Bryant's. And then he decides to transfer after those 4 games as well. Does he get a ring? Even though he didn't have that much impact on that football team. Or what happens if there's a guy on the first snap of the season, kickoff, opening kickoff, and something tragic happens, God forbid, and he gets an injury and he decides to transfer, but he played a snap. Do we get him the ring too? Like, are we going to start to determine the value or impact on the guy, whether they get a ring or not?
So my thing is, you make a great point, and that's actually the point I was going to make.
Thank you.
Kelly Bryant contributed more, Dan, than all the guys that were hamburger eaters. And you know what a hamburger eater is. He travels on the road trips, and he eats the food, but he never plays the games. Kelly Bryant's going to start 4 games, bail you out against Texas A&M, and then leave only so he can save a season for himself? And you ain't going to get the man
own.
A ring. Ring only costs $500.
Left on his own choice.
He was forced to leave. Yes, he did leave on his own. But in your same relationship analogy, Dan, just because somebody finally drew the line and said, I'm going to break up with you, they were forced to do that. Dabo had already left Kelly Bryant. He left Kelly Bryant when he benched him to start the second half against A&M.
Well, so Kelly Bryant won't be able to get a ring at Mizzou because they're in a postseason ban. Can we also note that Acho said, I'd be thrilled to get Monday Night Football. He said nothing about the getting married part as well. Let's move on. Listen, no judgment. Let's move on to Texas A&M now. They went 9-4 in Jimbo Fisher's first year at College Station, finishing with a win over NC State in the Gator Bowl. There is a lot of talent coming to College Station. They had the 3rd-ranked recruiting class in 2019, which includes 13 ESPN 300 recruits. But, guys, their schedule is a gauntlet. They play 4 of the best teams in the country, according to the FPI, Clemson, Bama, Georgia, and LSU. And Ryan Leaf joins us now from College Station. You got to spend some time around the Aggies today. Ryan, what'd you learn about the team?
Well, they're very young, but they're very, very talented. And Coach Fisher has really kind of challenged them with this schedule, this gauntlet that you talked about. He's pretty much said this is the ultimate opportunity. It's not an obstacle for them, and he's trying to use that to their advantage. They're very young, like I said, 5 seniors on this roster. They have to look to replace that big-time running game from a year ago. But I like his mindset, and I like the way the team is responding to him early on.
You know, the great thing about Texas A&M right now is look at their schedule. We're not even highlighting Auburn because the schedule is so hard with Clemson, Bama, Georgia. Like, we're not even highlighting Auburn, who's going to be really good. But the great thing about this football team is they've got a reliable quarterback, Kellen Mond, who kind of started to put himself certainly on the SEC radar, but the national radar is one of the better quarterbacks in the country. And he's got 3 absolute dogs on the outside that he's going to be able to throw to, and Osbin and Courtney Davis and Rogers. So this is an offense that still skill position wise has a lot of people that can make some noise. They've got some people to replace on defense. But Ryan, you mentioned the schedule. It's difficult. I will say this, though. This team could potentially be one of the rare cases where they're a better football team, and it doesn't necessarily show in the wins and losses record because of that schedule. But we all know Jimbo was brought there to do one thing: knock off Nick Saban, win national championships.
You know, they are definitely in that position, right? They are going to be a better ball club, I think, this year. And it may not reflect in the schedule. There's a few other organizations in college football the same way, but this is one of them. They just have a brutal schedule. All 4 of those teams we talked about, discluding Auburn, could be a number 1 ranked team at some point during this season, and they get an opportunity to play each and every one of them. And he's coaching this team like it's an ultimate opportunity and not an obstacle at all, even though they got plenty of those obstacles in the way.
Well, Acho, question for you. When you have the hierarchy of the SEC, the Alabamas, the Georgias, LSU, Auburn, where does Texas A&M fit in the top of the SEC?
To me, A&M is tier two. That is, you have Alabama, you have Georgia. Then you have to put A&M right below them with LSU and Florida. You saw what they did to LSU last year. That was a nail biter. A&M's a very, very good football club. I will admit, I was surprised with what Jimbo was able to do last year. Took Clemson down to the wire. Won 9 games in his first year as a head coach. Again, they have a lot to replace this coming year, but A&M's a good ball club. Aggieland is a tough place to play, and I think again this year, yes, their schedule will be tough, but I expect them to have 9, 10, or even 11 wins. They will upset one of those teams on that schedule.
I'm telling you, everyone's just kind of shooing in Clemson to play them in week 2, and I know it's on the road. Texas A&M is going to challenge Clemson. Jimbo Fisher is a coach who knows exactly how to find your weakness and go attack it. And this team, Ryan's talked about it. This is opportunity, and Jimbo's going to have them ready to play week 2.
The question is, which team are they going to upset and beat? That's the biggest thing for me.
Yep.
If you look at it on paper, and if you look at it just chalk, you don't see a victory against those 4 teams, especially with them all being on the road except for Alabama. But you're right. I think they find a way to upset somebody, and I think they're around a spot where they're 8, 9, 10 wins this season.
Well, we are going to continue our tour of Texas because Maria and Holly have made their way to Austin on their Taylor road trip. We'll join the ladies from deep in the heart of Texas coming up next. And ACC Network is coming August 22nd. Visit getaccn.com to check availability. If you don't see your provider listed, demand they carry ACC Network.
College Football Live is brought to you by Exxon and Mobil's new Synergy Supreme Plus, their best fuel ever.
I don't think there's anyone more competitive than I am. I'm always going to be trying to win in everything that I do.
He's a stud, man. He's a tough guy.
Shotgun snap, back Gallagher. Pressure coming. Sam into the end zone. Touchdown, Texas.
Got the first and plenty more to the 10, to the 5, and he's into the end zone. Touchdown.
Play action. Gallagher rolling right, looking to throw again. Going deep. Downfield. He's got a man open. It is caught. Touchdown, Texas.
Being able to get the chance to play at DKR in front of 100,000 people with burnt orange on it's unlike anything else.
All the eyes are on Texas quarterback Sam Ellinger this season. Expectations very high, as always, as he returns for his 3rd year as the Texas starting quarterback. We have more on what he's been working on this offseason.
Obviously, having Colin come back is huge. Just what we did last year, just throwing the ball up, it's really hard for guys to cover a guy who's 6'6 and has great ball skills and runs great routes. But Devin Duvernay, he played outside last year. He's going to play a little bit of inside for us this year. And I'm really excited for that because, I mean, he's consistently running 22 miles an hour. And so the
speed. That was his GPS is saying?
Yeah.
22 miles an hour
consistently. Like, if he's not above 21, that means he's
having a bad day.
He didn't hit his top speed.
So how do you adjust your route, like, for you to know that his timing and his miles per hour, like, that's good for you?
No, that's great. That's great. And you want to be able to throw to fast receivers because he's going to be lined up against safeties and guys that aren't really used to covering fast guys like that. So it's going to be really good. But just putting a little bit extra on it and having to get the ball out fast, cause if I wait too long, he's going to be 40 yards down the field before I even throw it.
So Texas's offense, while productive, scoring 30 points a game last year, was still behind some of their high-powered counterparts in the Big 12. Sam Ellinger is one of 5 returning offensive starters, along with big target Colin Johnson and center Zach Shackelford. And it is day 5 of the Taylor road trip. Holly and Maria are in Texas. And listen, they know if you want to earn respect in Texas, it's all about the wheels you ride up in.
Don, I don't have truck skills. I do not possess truck skills.
I hope I can touch the ground.
You can do it. Yeah.
Day 5. Let's go. Let's go.
Everything's bigger in Texas, and we made it.
Including our rental car.
Come on.
Live in the flesh. Live in
What's
the
up?
Flesh.
Way to crash our party.
Like, I had to. I saw it on TV, and I was like, they're in Austin?
They're coming to Texas?
They're in
did
Austin?
Did you really? Did you really?
I did.
Oh, thank God.
We've got fans.
That you do.
So, Emmanuel Acho, we're here at practice. We want to get into some nuts and bolts. I'm already having my eye on this offensive line. They're big, they're thick. I see physical play so far.
Yeah.
What do you expect?
It has to start from the offensive line, because Sam Ehlinger has to go crazy this year. I said that earlier in the week. I'm going to say it again. For Texas to dominate, it has to start and end with number 11, the quarterback.
But let's talk defense. They're missing 8 starters from a season ago. Yes. What is the change and the expectation on that side?
That is my biggest worry. When your two best players, when your two most seasoned players are the furthest away from the ball in the secondary, that's the question. So a lot of young players on the defensive front have to step up.
But what can they be for Texas?
Game changers. Caden Stearns is arguably the best safety to come out of Texas since Kenny Vaccaro, first round pick. Earl Thomas, a future Hall of Famer.
I believe it.
So like Caden Stearns is that dude. Make no question about it. And Brandon Jones is the best tackling safety I've ever seen in college. And that's not being a Texas guy. Just watch the dude play the game. The wide receiver group's the best position group for Texas. And it's the best position group that Texas has had in a very, very, very long time. Starting with Colin, guys in the slot like Duvernay, and a name to look out for, Epps, number 85, a huge target. He will go crazy this year. But they have a lot to play for. I mean, it's really going to come down to Texas and OU, and I just love the fact that you get to play each other twice. You have to earn it, but I love how the Big 12 Conference has rearranged things now to with that Big 12 championship game.
Maria and Holly continue their 7 schools in 7 days. Day 6 heads to Tuscaloosa. We'll have that in College Football Live tomorrow. So, guys, thanks to Joe Tess, we like to throw around the phrase, Texas is back. But Texas is a team that over a decade ago was used to being in the national championship conversation. So what is considered back, Dan?
Well, I already consider Texas to be back. And listen, I love the college football playoff, but we're kind of in this world where if you're not in the playoff, you're not considered to be back. I mean, that's the reality. And so if you're coming off of last year in the 10-4 season and absolutely burying Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, you can make the argument that they're already back with some of their losses that they had last year on the road against Oklahoma State, and obviously the 2-point conversion everyone remembers against West Virginia, and then the loss to Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. I mean, they are certainly back in the national picture. Tom Herman has done a great job. And here's the thing. They've got one of the better receivers in the country in Colin Johnson. They have one of the better quarterbacks in the country in Sam Ehlinger. And they have a bright, yawning college football star in Caden Stearns. So for all those variables, I consider Texas to be back.
Yeah, the idea that Texas needs to be back, I think, is the issue there. They were national championship contenders. And to have seasons like they have the last 4 leading into last year with 5 wins, 5 wins, 6 and 7 wins, 10 wins last year is a big deal, but it took 14 games to get that double-digit win total. And for me, that doesn't mean they're back. I think the full magnitude of backness for this Texas team is going to come in week 2 when LSU visits Austin.
But that's the problem with the college football playoff in a little bit, Ryan, because we kind of say, hey, if you're not in that 4, you're not technically back, or you can still be a college football playoff contender and national champion contender in the conversation and be quote unquote backness is the word that you use. Yeah. So I consider them to be in the picture.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with you when it comes to terms of the college football playoff. It diminishes the great college football we get to watch each week in and week out when we're just talking about Clemson and Alabama. And Texas produced a lot of good football this year, and I'm excited to see them play this coming season.
I also think it's different, guys, if you ask the fan base there in Austin, because the expectations 15 years ago, much different from the expectations now. So the definition of back may have changed just a bit. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us as well. We love them, the one-handed catch. Every time we say, did you just see that? We'll talk about it more as they have started to dominate college football, our favorites. That discussion coming up next. Monday on ESPN at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, we'll kick off our 4th annual fantasy football marathon with 28 straight hours of coverage. All the fantasy insight you need to get you ready for the season. Coverage will also be on ESPN2 and, as always, streaming live on the ESPN app. Oh, can't stop me now. Oh, can't stop me now. To heaven, the heaven wears a crown. I'm singing. Oh, can't stop me now.
one-on-one coverage. What a grab up top.
So good. You know, when you think of one-handed catches, you think of one name, Odell. But ESPN.com has an article out today about how the art of the one-handed catch is taking over the college game. So that got us to thinking, what are your favorite one-handed catches in college football? We'll start with you, Acho.
I got to go with N'Keal Harry, the dude from Arizona State back in the day, now first-round pick. Look at him. Not all one-handed catches are created equal. He made his one-handed catch with both feet off of the ground. And it was a big-time moment. Second and six, fourth quarter of a game. It wasn't just the casual, superfluous one-handed catch, D.O. It was when his team needed it. Most.
Such a prisoner of the moment, man. Such a prisoner of the moment. My brain can't go back more than 12 months. I'm going Charles Woodson on the sideline against Michigan State. Here's the crazy thing. This is a right-hander, a right-handed pick off the sideline. His body's going full speed left, and he cups it with the righty. In that moment, I was like, wow. That is something normal people cannot do.
He kind of used two hands, though, Danny.
How does the resident quarterback pick an interception? Mine's Kendrick Rogers, third overtime game against LSU. I was there on the sidelines, and when I saw this catch, I thought, this game is not ending for a very long time, and it didn't. It took until seven overtimes.
You guys remember
an
that catch?
Interception, Dan?
Yeah, well, I threw too many of them as a player, but you remember that catch Calvin Johnson had? Going across the middle, reach back with his right hand. You guys might be too young to even remember Calvin Johnson.
I remember
but,
that.
Against North Carolina State, that was a sick one, too.
You talk about age. I'm the same age as you, Dan, so let's not go there. So Jalen Ramsey had a comment out yesterday about how he would DM opponents' girlfriends. That was like his tactic to get under opponents. So, Dan, what did you do to get under opponents' skin?
Listen, I certainly, first of all, when I was playing, DMs weren't around. It was barely Facebook. I played at UConn, so, like, my biggest thing was trying to go beat the teams that we were playing against. Like, when we played Pitt or West Virginia, I just try to whip up on them and let them know, like, yes, the basketball school is beating your head in. But no DM sliding took place in my time.
Dan, you're much nicer than I. See, I only started trash talking if I was losing, guys and girls. And so we were losing to Baylor one year, my senior year, and they had a guy named Robert Griffin, not the quarterback RG3, but an offensive lineman. And during the course of the game, I looked at him. I stared at him deep in his soul, Dan, and I said, bro, you're not even the best Robert Griffin on your team. Ooh. He ended up beating us. It was bad.
Dan's lying. He totally had an AOL Instant Messenger screen name. We'll see it tomorrow at 4:00.